Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. This is an episode dedicated to dealing with an issue that I've been running into a lot lately. Needing to change my design while I'm in the middle of implementing. You know, standing there in the field, you got your gloves on, dirty design notes stuffed into a pocket, and you're looking around going, oh man, well that's not going to work now, is it? And then needing to come up with something quickly. Or accepting that, well, maybe you need some more time to think about this. So whether you take a few minutes while you're standing there or need to take a break and really examine the situation, that's what this show's about, so that you can move your design forward without having to scrap large parts of it or wait until better conditions are available. Specifically, I want to cover five things we should consider in order to be able to, as the U.S. Marine Corps would say, improvise, adapt, and overcome the situation. They are knowledge, skills, tools, materials, and time. Before I get into those, though, there are two quick things I'd like to mention. First, if you have any questions or comments for me, I can be reached directly via email at show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. Or, if you'd like, you can give me a call. That number is 717-798-8100. I'm not always around, but if you leave me a message, I can respond to any questions in a future episode, or send you back an email if you'd prefer. Feedback of all kinds is appreciated so that the show can continue to improve. Second, please, like the show on Facebook if you enjoy it. It helps spread the word. You can find it at facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast. Now then, why do I look to these five things in particular? For me, knowledge is about understanding the system, the design we want to build, and all the components within it, and how to implement all of that. It comes from what we use within permaculture, the core concepts of the ethics and principles, and also our understanding of plants, animals, and their needs, and how we can meet them, as well as our own physical and social needs. By applying this, we can then make choices based on what is at hand in order to continue the work. It includes things like what plants you can place in acidic soil or a shaded area, the potential vectors for a site, or what species we have that can be used for forage for any animals we're going to include. And from that is also an understanding of the limitations of our knowledge, so that we can stop, step back, and say, I don't know the answer to this. And then figure out what we're going to do in order to proceed, even if that includes going back to our design workspace for some research and to plan out some new ideas. For me, knowledge is also part of having access to a library of resources beyond what's stored in our own mind that are useful to us. That includes not only, you know, books and videos and things, but also people we can call on to ask questions of or to bounce ideas off of. This latter part, that network of people that we have, is one that is proving to me to be one of my most useful knowledge resources. Two that come to mind are my wife and in-laws, who've been doing gardening and floral design for years and years. And they're great to talk to about how to combine color, something that I don't have an eye for, and are near encyclopedic in their knowledge of ornamentals. And that helps me to build the aesthetic of a design, to make it more pleasing to the eye, and as we've talked about on several occasions, make this idea of permaculture easier to sell to the public at large. And then I also have a friend who's a forester, and he has very specific knowledge about trees and the world and diseases and how to grow things, and also his ability at identification. And because his perspective and viewpoint is very different from mine, we can have conversations about the application for different situations and what he would plant to a given end versus what I would do if I were to pursue it, and so on. And in all these cases, I get better at permaculture by talking with them about what they do. And also, sometimes if I'm in a pinch, I can send my buddy a text message with a question, I can call my wife, and find an answer to something that I might not have available to me in the field at the time that I'm there. From our knowledge, and all that information that's locked in our mind and our books and such, come our skills. And these are the practical techniques and tricks that we've learned that we use to apply the decisions we make with our knowledge. They're the other half of our experience, the part that comes from doing. This includes things like the best ways to dig a swale, cut sod, or join wood. And we develop our skills by getting out there and doing the work, so that they have an understanding of how our knowledge comes together in practice. And they also let us know what methods work best for us in accomplishing a task. In order to implement these things as our tools, and they start both with the beginning of our design and what we use to plan, mark out, and draw up a design, as well as what we use to actually implement it. And though it's possible to do much of the work of permaculture with only the most basic tools, having the right ones can make the job much easier or quicker to complete. As you learn more skills and gain further knowledge, you can refine which ones do the most good, which ones you'll always want to have part of your kit, and which ones have little or no value to you. Right now, I know that my core lot for design and mapping are just pencil, paper, some kind of a measuring tool, whether that's a tape or a wheel, a ruler, and a compass. That lets me go out there, take all the measurements that I need from a site, take all my notes, and then go back and draw it all up. But then for implementation, usually I want to have my straight-handled shovel, D-handled shovel, and a garden trowel, and that covers just about 90% of my situations, though sometimes I will toss in my digging fork, depending on what the ground's like. And as I say, that covers most of the situations that I'm going to be in. Of course, specific cases, maybe if you're going to be building some boxes for raised beds, putting in some timbers, or doing a very large pond or contouring, you know, you may need things like saws, hammers, an A-frame level, bunyip level, backhoe, a really large workforce, you need to call in a bunch of folks. You might consider your manpower as part of your tools. But generally, those are chosen as used as needed and don't form that kit that you grab most of the time. And then there are materials, what actually goes into the design, such as our plants and animals, and what's necessary to support them. Perhaps, you know, the fencing for our livestock, if we're putting in raised beds, both the wood to build that out of, a cardboard as a ground cover, maybe you're using a tarp to do a grass or weed kill over a large area. And then we need to look at, if they're not available when you need them, or in the form that you can use, what are your alternatives? In some cases, you're going to run into hard limits, things that aren't necessarily able to overcome. Say that you're planning on raising chickens, you've got your coop built, and are ready to go, but you don't have a source for them. And there isn't much that you can do at that time, but you may have to wait until next year for them to become available again. So that moves off the list of what you're doing at that time, and you move on to something else that you can work on. Though other times, you may come into a situation where you have something unexpected, like plants arriving too early for a project, and then you need to do something in order to keep them viable until they can be usable. I know I ran into a similar situation with this when I'd started some seedlings for transplant, and they wound up being much, much larger than I was expecting. And they needed to be transplanted several times before they could be set out into my yard and for my garden. Or you may have thought that you were receiving one plant, but instead you wound up with another. It was mislabeled, mistagged. Do you want to go through the time of returning it to the other company, picking up what you needed, or can you use the plant that you have in another way? What would you do with it in order to use it? And like the chicken coop example, with time and availability, you may need to wait in order to get something done. And like for me, my supply of cardboard is available only on Monday nights. So that's when I can go and pick it up. So if I'm working on something, I need to look at the stock of cardboard that I have available and plan my projects for the next week based around what I have, figuring on a resupply the following week. And thankfully, that source has been pretty steady, so I know about how much I can get each week and also how much, if there's an excess, I can fit into my vehicle. But again, needing to plan around what materials I have. One thing, though, that always seems to be in short supply when we need it, at least here in my household, is time. And if you need to make a new decision, or you're drawing a blank in your knowledge and need to research a new solution, you're going to need some time, whether that's a couple of minutes or a couple of days. And then based on that decision, it changes what you're going to do based on your updated conditions, and that can change the amount of time that it takes to accomplish something. What may have been 5 minutes in perfect conditions may now require 10, 15, an hour or more based on what your situation is. And if you've ever built boxes for raised beds, with power tools and a few assistants versus yourself with just hand tools, then you know what I'm talking about. The amount of time required to accomplish a task can vary greatly. Yes, you can still get it done, but you'll need to be ready to adapt your time in order to meet those needs. As great as it would be in order to stop, slow down, or make more time available, it's just not possible. So adjusting our plans to meet the available time can be one of the least mutable limits that we have to work with. Our growing season, for many of us, is a window within the year that opens and closes at fairly regular times, so plants need to be in the ground by certain dates to have a good harvest. If you're working with a client, you've established a design and a budget that only includes so many hours of labor. If you run into a problem, it can start to cut into your profit, delay that project, or delay the implementation of another one. And that's all kinds of things that we need to balance as we're working within a project and on a design. If one portion takes more time than we expect, is there another place where we can make that time up? Is it worthwhile to call and bring another person in order to get things done? Even if that changes, what are the resources that we have available to us? And that covers those five ideas in an overview with some examples. But let's put all that together into a larger example that comes from the Urban Ag program I'm working with. And this ag project is requiring me to constantly adapt because none of us know exactly what plants are going to be available for planting, what seeds we have, or what our manpower is going to be like. There are a number of people who have volunteered plants to the project, but what exactly shows up and what their condition is, their quantity, quality, is always an unknown until they're there and we get to look at them. And the same goes for the volunteers who are on site to help us with the project. And that can vary from as little as one adult and a couple of children volunteers to five adults and a dozen or more children, each of us controlling and working on different aspects of the project at the time. And knowing that, I started my design in a general way with a zone one kind of vegetable garden, a zone two orchard and soft fruit area, as well as a large production area, which is where our piles of mulch, manure, leaves, and other things that are dropped off by volunteers go and aren't used as often as the other areas within the site, but rather we go to them in order to pool certain materials as we're working in different areas. And as much as I'd like to have them near that zone one and zone two area, having a big pile of horse manure anywhere near the administrative building where visitors might be coming and going often is really just a no-go, and that's just a limitation of the site. I need to understand that limitation and design appropriately around that. But using that information, my sketch of the site as a base, every time I go to the site, I need to look at what's there, reassess what's available, and then proceed with the implementation based on the sketch and initial design notes that I have. We've got small fruits this week. What are they? Do I know about their spacing requirements and how they should be planted? Yes? Okay, good. We can proceed. If no, I don't. Does anyone else on the site know about the plants and what we can do? If not, can I make a phone call to someone I know who can find that information for me, and then we can begin implementation? If not, then do we need to take action in order to preserve those fruits until the next volunteer day when we're all there working? And then once we are ready to proceed, again, with these small fruits, well, I know that they're supposed to be part of this Zone 2 orchard area, and that's this long line running north to south on the eastern edge of the property. So I go out, mark where the trees will go eventually, whenever they show up, whatever they may be, and then we set out those soft fruits and proceed on planting them. And getting them into the ground requires certain skills and tools that we have available in a way that makes the best use of the time. I mean, the number of shovels that we have that are appropriate for cutting and lifting sod is limited, so maybe only one person can do that. But we have a lot of trowels that were donated. They're plentiful. So rather than having one person use the shovel, dig a hole, plant one plant, move, dig the next hole, and create a bottleneck, rather one person can go through, cut and remove the sod in just a couple of minutes, use the shovel to break up the soil in the hole, and then move on, while we have small teams use trowels to remove the dirt and prepare the hole, and they can kind of follow our shoveler. And behind them, another team can move through with a mixture of compost and fertilizer to add with the soil that was dug out to provide a better home for the plant. Another team comes behind, adds the plant, tamps down the soil. Another group comes behind with water, with a little bit of liquid fertilizer in it, and they water the plant. Another team comes through, and they're adding compost and mulch on top to finish our planting. And that allows us then to get all those plants into the ground in just a couple of hours with the volunteers that we have, who have in many cases little or no gardening experience. And by reading the site, the current situation, applying those five ideas of knowledge, skills, tools, materials, and time, we're able to accomplish the most with what we have and proceed in a meaningful way rather than sitting and spinning our wheels. So, can you think of any situations that you've been in where you've had to adapt and change the conditions that you were presented with? Were you able to do so quickly, or did you need to take more time? And did you find that these five areas applied to that situation, or would you add other ways of breaking down what's necessary to improvise and adapt? If so, I'd love to hear from you. Head over to the website at thepermaculturepodcast.com and leave a comment. And that's going to bring this episode to a close. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.